Hi, I'm Matthew Schwartz, Executive Editor with Information Security Media Group. It's my pleasure to sit down with Jeff Moss, the founder of Black Hat. Here we are, this is the 24th annual Black Hat Europe Conference, now in London.
So when Black Hat started, we were really a sort of a crystal ball, and you could look in it and you could see, oh, it's back then it was authentic code, it was, you know, credit card, it was certain things you could see where the whole industry was moving. And now the industry is everything, right? It's operating technology and IoT and smart cities and satellite space, aerospace. It's so pervasive now that any one of those fields could have a really interesting breakthrough or security moment, and you might miss it because it's, you know, I remember when the physical security community, we discovered Black Hat, people, and then access control, and then it was, in home security systems, and then it was like telco. Everybody bumps into Black Hat at some point or in the security community, and they have a rude awakening, right? Fare card systems for subways or whatever, right? There's a number of those that have problems. But now it seems like it's some industries more mature, biotechnology, right? The FDA, implantable medical devices, they're getting better because they've endured a certain amount of scrutiny. And it's a highly regulated area. The next area I'm hoping that gets a bunch of focus, we had election systems that got an exception under the DMCA in the United States. There's been some around right to repair, we're hoping, or reverse engineer. And so I think there's going to be some big battles around right to repair, right to own your code, right? And I think that kind of, not data sovereignty, but like, you know, you need to have some rights over your digital, not identity, because it's not purely just identity, but your, it's sort of like in the newer social media landscape after kind of the collapse of X, there's more of these distributed social media platforms, Mastodon being one of the most popular ones, but there's other things in the distributed Fediverse. And Cory Doctorow wrote an interesting piece where he says basically, like, blue sky looks really interesting, and I know some of the people, and it's vibrant, and it's great, but I'll never go there. I've been tricked and fooled too many times that I'm only going to put my energy into platforms where I can move my identity to another platform. If I don't like how, and by doing that, it's this...
portability.
Yeah, it's like portability, but and it's called, what did he call it, Methuselian, not paradox, but it's essentially what happens is if I'm running a site, but my customers can easily move, I'm constrained in how much I can abuse my customers because there's like that network lock-in effect, right? And my VC might be demanding that I mine the data more, I run more ads, I maximize the revenue, but if they know they do it too much, customers can just move, the VC might not pressure the business as much, and the business might be able to still do things that, you know, the customers find novel and interesting. And so so in his article, he's saying, even though blue sky is new and interesting, you're still sort of locked in. And so until you can move to other instances, no matter how noble they are today, 5 years from now, when you're really locked in, they might have new owners, new things, right? And so I think that, I'm fascinated by that concept. I've really been, because it goes back to the old bulletin board days, you could change bulletin boards. Is there something to this distributed nature, or market forces so great with the centralization and efficiency of Gmail or whatever, nobody's ever gonna run their own mail server again, right? Is there room in today's highly efficient and centralized internet for distributed experience? I'm super curious.
Even if it gets messy.
Yeah, even if it's a bit messy, but is there, sort of a grassroots, it'll never be as competitive or as great as a Threads or whatever, because right now there's no monetization pathway. So if you're a super influencer, you wouldn't really go to Mastodon, you can't make money there, right? And if that's your business model, it's not gonna work. But if you can get paid for clicks on Threads or X or whatever, right? So you won't ever get those super celebrities looking for that kind of adrenaline rush connection, but maybe it can be that third space. It can be another space that's complementary. It's not going to ever replace, but also it can't really be replaced because it has features that are orthogonal. Like Facebook will never let you easily move to Facebook 2 and Facebook 5, right? Like, not going to happen. So yeah, so I've been thinking about that a bit. I'm trying to think, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up that was also, oh, I don't know if you've been reading or coming across it, but there's this sort of meme that I've run across in Reddit and other places, and when people are talking about the sort of accelerationism, whether it's fall of Syria or whatever, and it's kind of a quaint thing. They say, oh, well, we're already in World War III. World War III has already started, we just haven't noticed it yet. And so what the historians sort of liken it back to all the pre-World War II, pre-World War I conditions in Germany, that it just didn't happen on a specific date. It was years of historians looking back and say, well, really, you know, it was the Bavarian beer hall riot. It was this, it was that, it was, you know. And so we're in that kind of, they're arguing that we're in that period of a World War III, right? We're not in the heat of the battle, but we're clearly entering a phase. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. What does that mean? Like, what do you do differently? How do you behave differently? Do you have different expectations, right?
Could anyone tell at the time? Was there anybody who was accurately
predicting it? Or was it a super minority? And since they were a super minority, they couldn't influence the outcome because they were too, you know, inconsequential. There's this thought experiment I did about the U.S. election. And it was basically, there's three clocks running. There's the sort of the clock of uncertainty. You don't know who's going to be elected. And that's all the way up, you know, for years. We don't know who's running, then we know who's running, who's going to be elected. Then you know who's been elected, but they're not in power yet. And then there's the third clock, now they're in power, and now they can get about their governing. So the question is, do you do anything differently during each one of these clocks? Because if you don't do anything differently during these three periods, it's as if they don't matter, so why worry about it, right? You're just stressing yourself out. But if you're like, well, in the first clock, I need to come up with a plan for, you know, if person A or person B wins. In the second clock, I need to diversify my portfolio or sell my car or, you know, whatever, you know, go to gold or whatever your crazy thing is, right, like that. But if you don't have plans like that, and because I'd have a lot of friends who are very anxious and stressed out about whatever it was, you know, is there going to be rate inflation? Should they get their mortgage renewed now before the rates go up? You know, with our job insecurity, should I retrain because the new administration is probably going to crack down and, you know, or have a trade war and that's going to raise the prices and then I can't compete. And so when I laid this out, I'm like, well, are you going to do anything differently in any of these periods or not? And in the end, it was just a lot of undirected frenetic energy, but no real plan. And I'm wondering, is it sort of the same thing with this idea of like we're in a World War III? It's like, okay, do you do anything differently? And it seems like all the social pressures are to do nothing different. Fascinating.
That's a great concept, especially as things feel like they're getting out of control. A little bit of a mind over matter, perhaps, takeaway there in terms of control what you can control.
Right.
Try not to sweat the other stuff.
Because I think it's sort of self-care. Right, you can get stressed out about so many things, and you only have so much time to be stressed out. And so you have to decide what you care about. You know, and in your career, people who come charging into information security and they're going to solve the world, they're going to fix everything, and everything's on fire. And it's like, dude, things have been on fire for as long as I can remember. Like, this industry will never not be on fire. So it's really about the journey, right? You got to pace yourself. You got to pick your fights and pick your battles, and you have to be okay not winning. You have to be okay not solving everything. You have to be okay with half measures and half solutions, which suck. But if you have a black and white absolutist view, you're going to burn out. And I saw a trend in friends who would enter security, they'd do it for a number of 5-6 years, they'd get burned out, they'd go into development. They're like, I can write code, I can ship code, I can do my thing. And then after a while, they're like, yeah, but now I want to go fix a thing or get, and then go into, and there's this cycle between where they control everything in the code to it's all sort of chaos and battling and security and back and forth. And that was the way people kind of modulated their mental health. So you're like, what phase are you in now? You know, thinking of going to work for Amazon. Ah, okay, I know what you're doing next.
Thank you for bringing us up to date on where Black Hat stands these days.
Yeah, I wish I had more kind of specific technical Black Hat talks I could dig into, but really, I'm having such a good time running around talking to people, popping into this talk, popping that, that I'll just watch them, you know, online later and really try to use the time here for more of the the social interactions and help orient me like what I should be caring about technically.
Curate your long-term thinking a little bit.
Yeah, like
as you
me.
Say though, the social networking aspect of the community building aspect
right.
of this
well, I
should
a,
never be under.
Under well, I had a friend whose his whole career has been kind of in security and networking, and I've been in security, but we've been at different levels. Like when you're organizing conferences and you're just getting the researchers that are doing the novel work and finding the newest interesting bugs, that's different than if your security is like, my product's end of life, can I update it one more time? And you know, they're very different. And so I talked to him about problems and he had to stop me a couple times. He's like, I'm in security, but we're in completely different universes. You know, I'm working at a quote unquote, you know, hyperscaler, but all my networking gear is end of life a year ago. Nothing's been updated, right? I have to fight to get anything done. All my printers are vulnerable, but nobody wants to change them because that's how the invoice is, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, and you're sitting there worrying about AI taking over the world, right? They're completely different universes, right? And you live in one world and I'm living in another. And so it's really fascinating then to talk to your peers and find out, well, what do they find interesting versus what's practical, you know? Because you can find yourself kind of disjointed. Sometimes, especially in research, there's this quest to find the green field. How do you make a name for yourself in security? Well, you have to find something new, or you have to go 2 miles deep. The last guy went a mile deep, you've got to go 2 miles deep, right? And that's how you're going to get noticed. And so that leads to certain kind of outcomes. Like you don't always fully develop fixes to the last problem because you're off to the races to find the next problem. That's how you get rewarded. And so maybe in academia, it's about publishing. Maybe here it's about releasing, you know, CVEs or bug reports or, you know, writing a great paper. And so there is a, you know, there's a little bit of, you're at the top of the apex, but the problem is that the vast majority for solving harm to users is at the bottom of the pyramid, but all the exciting stuff's at the top of the pyramid, right? And there's a, you know, there's a paradox there. You still know, like if you saw, there was a talk about, an insurance company talk about where they can correlate what actually improves security outcomes for companies, for claims. And the number one thing that had the highest correlation was if your data was on the dark web. Didn't matter what it was. It could be an email address that one of your employees used to sign up for something else. It had nothing to do with your company being compromised. But just the presence of your data on the dark web was highly predictive. Then second was if you patch within 7 days. Or whatever the, you know, measurement was, 8 days or something. It's like, well, that's not very sexy. That doesn't sound super exciting, right? But those are the two things that had the biggest outcomes on companies having security claims. And so we have to be okay. We have to accept that there are these two worlds, you know, that we're operating in.
So you can love the whiz bang research.
Love
you
it.
Can come for the great, we pwned this, we pwned that talks.
Right.
But never forget that the practicalities can often seem alarmingly mundane.
Right, right. And maybe that's an outcome. And then you use that to say like, hey, we really need to do the basics. And then maybe that frees up money to do the more exciting stuff. But you're never really going to do the super advanced stuff if you can't even do the basics, right? So super fascinating.
Jeff, thank you so much for your time and your insights. It's
yeah.
much appreciated.
You're welcome.
For ISNG, I'm Matthew Schwartz. Thank you for joining us.